Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman. A weekly psychic fusion of forward thoughts, far-out ideas, magical foray, and spellbinding song. Stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.
The Way of the Leopard, Session 5. Obstacles to Spiritual Practice.
So welcome to this session on obstacles along the path. Obstacles to spiritual practice. So what are these obstacles to spiritual practice? It's very important to explore this. In fact, I think this is probably one of the most important of all our sessions with the Way of the Leopard teachings. So I think to start off, like we always do, I'd like to start off with a little bit of meditation, just to tune in and bring your awareness into your body, to dive into your inner landscape. So here we go. So you're just sitting in your chair, wherever you are, closing your eyes and bring your awareness inwards. Taking a deep breath in and diving into the internal world, diving into your internal landscape, filling it with prana, filling it with awareness, filling it with wonder and magic. This earth walk is full of possibility. It's full of possibility. Full of possibility, full of wonder, full of opportunity. So breathing into your inner landscape. Becoming aware of your heartbeat. Breathing into your heartbeat. Allowing your heartbeat to become the metronome, the spiritual metronome, or fulcrum, or rudder, or engine behind your spiritual practice. So taking three deep breaths in, so you can breathe in through the nose, breathing in deeply, stretching up through the spine and the crown of your head. And as you're breathing out, being aware of releasing the breath all the way down to your belly button and igniting the fire of your little dancer below your belly button. Feel a little tingle down below your belly button. And again, one more time, breathing in. Breathing out, connecting with the little dancer below your belly button. And one more time, breathing in. And breathing out, releasing the breath all the way down to your little dancer below your belly button. Really breathing into that space, occupying that space, occupying your center, occupying your sacral center. Feel the belly button going in that place. And then a few leopard growls. Feeling that vibration in your center. Turning that growl into something a little bit more dynamic. Opening the mouth, showing those teeth. Bringing that vibration all the way down into your center, feeding your center, feel the tingle in your center, awaken the little dancer, because all of life starts from that space below your belly button, your creativity, your spirituality, and your obstacles come from that place. So as we energize that place, start to be aware of the feelings that start to come up. Start to be aware of that life force energy and just breathe into it and just hold it there. Feel the stillness there. Become very present there. So I'm going to do a little bit of chanting now just to open the space a little bit more. And this session is a very serious session for me because I've encountered lots of groups over the last 8 years, traveling all around the world. And sometimes I'm filled with a lot of sadness because I see people who have such potential and so many gifts. And sometimes they give these gifts away because they don't recognize their gifts and they don't do the work that is required so that they can flower like lotus flowers. So, one of the biggest obstacles to spiritual growth is not looking at your pain, not looking at your sadness. So, the way of the Sangoma is the way of praying to your pain. So, the Sangoma way is the way of the wounded healer, is the way of praying to your pain. So as you're sitting here now, I want you to just be aware of any kind of issues or pain or trauma that you have. And I don't want you to ignite it. I don't want you to go into the story. All I want you to do is just breathe into it. So like I say, one of my sadnesses that I've felt over the years is that people have a lot of potential and what gets in their way is their inability to just accept their pain and work with their pain. So with us Sangomas, we see the pain as the doorway to God. We see your pain as the doorway to God because where your wounds are is where your potential lies. So there's a wonderful saying by a man called the Prophet, and his name is Cahil Gibran, and I recommend anyone to have a look at some of his quotes. Just put in the Prophet into Google. And he has a lovely quote saying, God shines through the cracks in our humanity. I think that's absolutely beautiful. God shines through the cracks in our humanity. So my sadness, like I say, is often people, I experience them having lots of dreams and lots of wonderful awakenings, and then they don't do the next step. They don't do the work that is required to turn into these beautiful lotus blossoms. And partly it's because of the fear of their pain or the fear of their wounds or the fear of their shame. So I really welcome anyone along the spiritual path to just look at your pain, look at your suffering, and not doing anything about it, just breathe into it and just be aware of it. And as you do that, the doors will open for you and you're going to achieve the states that you are looking to achieve. You will achieve your fullest potential. So I'm known as an elephant doctor. We're known as the people of the elephant. Sangomas are known as people of the elephant because our job is to help remove the obstacles for people, to help remove the obstacles along their spiritual path. So the elephant in the South African bush is a road maker. They go through the bush and they clear the bush and they make space for the other animals to move through. So the medicine people, the Sangomas, are elephant people because we use prayer, herbs, dream work, and counseling sessions to help people find their own spiritual path. We help people to open the road, to help remove obstacles along people's spiritual path. Now, saying that, I can't actually remove obstacles for you. I can't do that. But all I can do is share some stories with you and some ideas and some practical tips so that you can remove your own obstacles. So saying that, one of the biggest challenges I find sometimes in teaching is that people don't do the work themselves. They expect the teacher to do it for them. And that's a very unfortunate thing. So when I started with my teacher many years ago, my Sangoma teacher, she said to me, I can show you 20%. Your own ancestors are going to show you the other 80%. So what did that mean? It meant that she could show me the container of my spiritual practice, how to pray, how to engage with my spirituality. However, I needed to do the other 80%. So it's like that in all traditions and all spiritual paths. It's very important for the student to make a decision. Do I want to wake up? Do I want to connect with my life path? Do I want to understand, why do I eat every day? What is the face before I was born? What is my face going to be when I die? What is my direction? What is my spiritual vocation? These questions are very personal questions, and they're very dynamic questions, because as soon as you're asking these questions, you're starting to ignite your own spirit. You're starting to bring your spirit closer to you. And the only way to ignite that further is to actually bring your awareness inwards and to start looking at what's happening to you, what's happening to your spirit. It's because we find in South Africa, amongst the Sangomas, as soon as someone stands up and says, I want to connect with my destiny, I want to connect with my life path, as soon as that happens, then we get to see where the mud is, all the difficulties we have start surfacing. And that's considered a good thing. That's considered a wonderful thing. So when I start any of my workshops or retreats around the world, I always say to people, if you feel angry, and if you feel upset, if you feel emotional, or if you feel blissed out, or if you feel extremely happy, that's all wonderful. That's a sign that the medicine that I'm bringing is serving you, and we are working well together. However, if you don't feel anything, then please come and speak to me. However, what I find with a lot of people is that they experience a lot of anger or a lot of grief or a lot of this or a lot of that, and then I never see them again. And that's very sad, because when you are feeling angry and you're feeling all these emotions, it's a sign that this medicine is working for you. Why? Because as you make the decision to wake up, as you make a decision to connect with your spirit, to connect with your vocation of why am I alive? As soon as you do that, you are shown the cracks in your humanity. And that's beautiful, because why are we here on this earth plane? To develop our relationships, to develop ourselves. So as soon as we decide to wake up, the great spirit and the ancestors show us where our cracks are. So that is the time to continue to do the work. That is not the time to suddenly give up and start another practice because you're not feeling good. So I encourage you, when you're doing these practices and you're listening to your heartbeat and you're going through these steps on this beautiful way of the leopard teachings, If you're feeling any kind of emotion, wonderful. If you're feeling any kind of grief or depression, wonderful. The next step is to breathe more deeply into that and breathe it out into your feet. Feel it and let it go. Don't hold on to it. Don't hold on to your pain. Just let your story go. Okay, so I'm going to do a little chant now. And that chant is basically to help open the road. To help open the road for me, to teach you, and to also help open the road for you, wherever you are. After the chant, I'm going to carry on with these teachings. So here we go.
John Keith Kelly Lockley, Diangola, Dia Tandas, City Tramago, Diangola, Kelly Lockley, Diangola, Guevne Suguini, Diangola Cocono, Vanilla Cocosamani, Cocomayweso, Cocom Papa, Cocomadumela, City Tramago, Diangola Manguev, that is Suguini, Titi Tramago, Quescaculo, Titi Tramago, Funlena Maniang Tramago, Quesiam Tramago, Vasiame, Vasitandas, Vasiamo Pambil, City Tramago.
So call on the ancestors, call on the Great Spirit to help us connect with our humanity, to help us to wake up. So take a deep breath in. So I pray that we can all connect with the cracks in our humanity, so that we can connect with the mud that we are walking on, so that we can turn that mud into beautiful fertilizer, so that we can turn into these beautiful lotus flowers. So I just want to talk a little bit about obstacles to spiritual practice. So one of the biggest obstacles I have found with people is this whole area of what you call projection. So basically, if you're feeling bad inside and you don't want to look at that sadness or grief, you blame the person next to you. So maybe it's your best friend, maybe it's your wife or your girlfriend, maybe it's your spiritual teacher. And those feelings can build and actually turn into war. So you look at the war we have in the world today, where people are blaming one another for conflict. Oh, it's not my fault. It's the Arabs, or it's the Jews, the blacks, or it's the whites, or it's the, you know, this skin person or that skin person. People are blaming one another all the time, all the time. It's religion. It's politics. It's not my fault. It's the president's fault. It's the CEO's fault. And so on and so on. And there's almost like a never end to this blaming of one another. How can all that stop? Breathe in, feel your own pain. And to take responsibility for your own pain means to just feel it. And then the next step becomes clear. Yes, there is a time to rise up, like I've seen in South Africa, when then there's an oppressive regime and it's time to rise up and make your voices heard. Yes, there is a time for that. But you have to be very clear when that time is. And the only way you know that is by just owning and being aware of your own emotions first, not making it someone else's problem. So one of the ways I see this is in the spiritual arena, for example, if people are experiencing negative emotions, say in a workshop or retreat, and then they're blaming it on the teacher. I've seen a lot of that. And that's very unfortunate because it sets up a difficult relationship with the teacher, and also the student then doesn't get to experience the fullness of the medicine. So this blaming energy is very powerful and a very strong obstacle to spiritual practice. And it's something that each of us need to be aware of. So this one wonderful Zen mentor of mine once said to me when I was speaking to him, as soon as people get into a situation of she said, he said, and you find yourself going into that kind of area in terms of gossip, she said, he said, she said, he said, then you've lost your way. So the important thing is, what are you doing right now? Where is your center? What's happening to that little dancer inside of you? Hold on to that. So each person is responsible for finding their own spiritual path, their own practice. And that's your job. It's each human being's job on this planet is to find the answer to the question of what is your vocation? What is your spiritual vocation? Why are you here on this earth plane? And that's a very simple question. And it also, the answer can be very simple as well. Like, you're here because part of your work is to be a mother or a teacher or a postman or a professor or a farmer, or whatever it is. Whatever job you're doing in the world is just to feel it and do it 100%. So every human being is equal in this world. Even though we're living in a very unequal world, every human being's life is equal. So what does that mean? It also means that each human being is responsible for the state of humanity, the state of the planet. So that's quite radical. That's quite radical. So once I remembered going into to lead a conference. It's a conference in England. And I started the conference. I started the ceremony. And on one side of the room, the people were coughing and coughing and coughing. And on the other side of the room, they were shuffling and moving and shuffling and moving. And I started the ceremony, I started calling in the ancestors and doing an invocation. And the coughing carried on the right side of the room, the left side of the room, people were shuffling around and some were leaving and some were staying. And eventually I just stopped. I stopped the whole ceremony. And I said to them, what I'm saying to you right now, each of us are equal. Each of us are part of the circle of humanity. In this moment, I'm teaching something, but I'm not better than you. I'm just standing up and showing something. I'm teaching something. However, each of you in the room have a responsibility to connect with your own ancestors and to connect with your own spirit. If you don't do that, then the ceremony breaks up and we can't have a ceremony. I'm bringing my part in the ceremony, but I am not in control of the ceremony. I am just one human being, part of the circle. So each person here in the group have a responsibility to connect with their own spirit and to connect and call on their own ancestors and bring in their own prayers and hold the circle. And the next thing I said, if you feel you cannot do this or you do not want to do this, then I suggest that you leave the room and you leave the ceremony now. Because I can't run a ceremony if one of you is not prepared to connect with your ancestors and your own spirit. So I waited. A few people left. The majority stayed. And people afterwards said to me that that was one of the most powerful ceremonies they had ever done. And they also said something very interesting to me. They said they never realized the responsibility they had, that they had the power. So I thought that was very beautiful. So it's very important for people to realize that even though you may be poor, even though you may be uneducated, even though you may feel a victim, you have a lot of power. What is that power? You are a human being. And the first thing you need to do is connect with your spirit inside of you, the blood in your veins, and stand up and say, I am. Say your name, light a stick of incense, stomp your feet in the ground, and feel your own pain. Without doing anything, just feel your own pain and make a commitment. Make a commitment to connect with your humanity, to connect with your spirit. So, when people blame others and put the responsibility of their happiness onto other people, then we create this war in the world. So I'd like to tell you another story around that. And it's the story of Nelson Mandela. A lot of you have heard of Nelson Mandela. He is a very famous person in South Africa. And he's the first democratically elected South African president. And he is also a man with indigenous roots. A Xhosa man, but a man with Khoisan blood. These are Bushmen people who now live in the Kalahari, and they are reputed to be the oldest indigenous tribe in the world. So here you have a man who was put into prison for 27 years, incarcerated, treated in a terrible way, an indigenous leader, and you think, yeah, it's very easy for him to blame in that situation. And yes, it is. Completely correct to blame. But how could he find freedom? Never mind freedom for his people, but his own personal spiritual freedom. How could he find that in that situation? So let me tell you a story about him. His turning point came for him when he was in prison and he just had this small little cell. And he remembered one day he went into the cell and he felt all this anger. That anger was burning him up inside. He was so angry about the way his people were being treated. He was so angry at the way he had been treated. And he felt such anger towards the nationalist government in South Africa at the time. And also white people. He felt this hatred burning him up inside. He was going to explode. In the midst of his anger and this burning sensation came a small little voice, a voice of reason, and it said to him, "Nelson, this anger can kill you. Nelson, this anger and bitterness inside can kill you. You need to befriend the enemy. You need to befriend the enemy." And suddenly this little voice inside of him got bigger and bigger until he kept quiet and he calmed down. And the next thing, he decided to just have a little conversation with his jailer, literally the guy who was locking him up and opening the door every day. His jailer was a white man, uneducated, and from a very different background, he thought, to him. So he started speaking to him, and he started to hear the man's story. And the more this jailer told his story, the more compassion Nelson started feeling for him, because he found out that this jailer, who was locking him up every night, came from a very, very disadvantaged background. He had to leave school at the age of 15 because his father died, and he had to support his whole family, brothers and sisters and mother. And his family was destitute. So that's why he had to leave his family farm and get a job as a jailer in the prison services, because that was the only job he could get. As he was talking, Nelson Mandela felt, "I am luckier than this man, because I was able to go to school and university and get educated." And then the more he spoke, he also realized something else. This white man, this jailer, also came from the Eastern Cape, and he could speak Xhosa fluently, his own language. So they started speaking, and Nelson Mandela's heart started opening. And this started changing things for him, because as the years went by, he started giving this man advice and saying, "You must finish your schooling." And he encouraged him to finish his schooling part-time. This was the beginnings of his rise to becoming one of the most famous statesmen and humanitarian leaders that the world has ever seen. Befriend the enemy. Befriend the enemy. So we all have to befriend the enemy inside of us. What is that enemy inside of us? It's anger. It's jealousy. It's grief. It's betrayal. All these difficult human emotions are at war inside of us. And if we make someone else the object of that, the war continues, not just inside of us, but it spreads like a virus. And the way we end that is to just look very carefully at what's happening inside of us. Feel the breath inside, say some prayers, and then take some kind of action. Some kind of action is needed. So if Nelson Mandela sat with his anger and his bitterness, as that voice said, it could kill him. But he took some kind of action. He got up, he opened his mouth, and he started to develop a relationship with his jailer. So part of this work has got to do with relationship. First, we develop a relationship with ourselves that is completely 100% authentic. What does that mean to be authentic? It means to look at your shadow, to look at those difficult feelings, those irritations. Look at the sadness, look at the grief, look at the anger. What is burning you up inside? Breathe into that. And then the next step is to take some kind of action. Feel, what is that action required? Does it mean going to befriend someone who's done you wrong? Does it mean taking up a spiritual practice where you're actually doing something like shaking your body, like dancing, like chanting? Some kind of action is needed. So this process of befriending the enemy, I find very, very beautiful, because we all have to do it to some extent with ourselves. So if you're interested in that story I just said about Nelson Mandela, you can read it in his Long Walk to Freedom. It's a lovely book. I highly recommend reading it. So I want to speak further about this action that we need to take in terms of opening the road for our spiritual practice and opening the road for enabling us to connect with the fullest of our human potential. So I see a lot of people doing what I call spiritual shopping. So this weekend they're doing African shamanism with me. Then next weekend it's Tibetan Buddhism. And then 3 weekends they're going to do a Reiki course. And then 4 weekends they're going to study with a Toltec shaman. And so on and so on. And it's very beautiful and it's very colorful. However, like I say, sometimes I've encountered people who come to my workshop and I have some kind of grief afterwards. I experience some kind of grief. And the reason is because I've heard the people talk about their dreams. And often I've encountered people experiencing sacred dreams through participating on one of my retreats. And my sadness or grief is that I often don't ever see them again. And the reason is because they are on this treadmill of spiritual shopping. So often with us, along the Sangoma path, on this traditional path, we say that if someone has experienced a good dream where they have experienced sacred medicine from a teacher or from doing a retreat, it's a clear sign that this path, this practice is for them. So when they stop and then they go off and start another path, there's some kind of sadness because, as we know, there's many paths up the mountain. And if we've had a good experience where the medicine is being shown to us on one path, it's a sign for you to carry on going along that path, carry on working with that teacher or with that tradition and move through the different steps that you need to move through. And that requires discipline, requires mindfulness, and it requires some form of action. So when people are always looking for that good feeling, oh, I encountered grief or difficulty at that workshop, but yet I had this very profound dream. Ah, that's a clear sign as a Sangoma that that work is for you. However, I find that a lot of people nowadays are looking for that good feeling. I must always feel good inside. And if you go to a workshop where you feel a sense of grief or unhappiness, people think, especially in the Western world, ah, that work is not for me. So we're dealing with what I call the cult of the individual, the cult of individualism, which means I, my, me, I must experience goodness, I must experience excitement, like an update for my iPhone. Everything must be updated, everything must be new and clean and exciting, like the world of a teenager. We know in South Africa that that is not the way of spiritual practice or spiritual work. So let me give you a few tips here. When you're doing a retreat or you're doing some kind of workshop and you're learning some kind of skill, you're learning something, you're making notes, you're learning. Now, in order for that learning to turn into knowledge and then for that knowledge to move to wisdom, requires integration. And that integration requires looking at the cracks of your humanity. It requires looking a little bit deeper. It requires integration. And as you integrate things and work things through, you're sticking your roots into the ground and you're pulling up the mud and you're allowing that mud to fertilize you. And then you start to flower into this lotus blossom, which turns into wisdom. Wisdom, that's what spiritual practice is about, turning knowledge and experience of all these workshops into wisdom. So if you are serious about connecting with your humanity, if you are serious about connecting with that question of why am I alive and how can I blossom, if you are serious about that, take a moment to feel your own cracks and your own pain. Now, this work is not just about pain. It's also about incredible joy. However, when people ignore their shadow, it comes out in all kinds of nasty ways. So An obstacle to spiritual growth is shopping. Going from one spiritual teacher to the next, one workshop to the next, there's almost no end to it. That is not spiritual. Spiritual practice all over the world for thousands of years has all got to do with one word, and that is service. When we are working with an elder in South Africa, a Sangoma elder, the question is, how can we help this elder? How can we help them? And often when you're helping the elder, the spirits bless you with dreams. The ancestors bless you with dreams. The elder, medicine man or woman, blesses you with transmission. What is transmission? It's when you're looking in the eyes of an elder, medicine person, and you feel compassion for them, and you don't think of I, me, all you think of, what can I do to help them? And you're in that moment and you're looking at them and there's that stillness and you just ask them one question about a dream that you've had. And then they explain the dream to you and your heart is open and their heart is open and something happens in that space. I was speaking to one of my Sangoma colleagues and he was telling me stories about his elders. And they have a saying also amongst the rural areas of the Eastern Cape. The best wood is the wood that takes a long time to light. Because that wood that takes a long time to light is that wood that's going to keep you warm throughout the night. The wood that lights quickly and burns quickly is not the kind of wood you're looking for in terms of throughout the night and throughout the days. So we are all searching for that wood inside of us that's going to burn slowly but deeply. So the quick excitement, quick titillation, be very, very careful of. Be very careful of that. Because it can lead you astray. If you listen to your heart and you feel a burning inside of you and you feel a good dream surfacing from a weekend, from doing a retreat, and maybe there's a bit of pain in the dream or maybe the dream is showing you that you need to work through something, that's a sign that you found your path. It's a sign that you found something very beautiful and very golden. So, the way of the Sangoma is the way of the wounded healer, the way of praying to your pain, just feeling the cracks in your humanity and feeding it with prayer, feeding it with mindfulness. So, what is mindfulness? Mindfulness is radical listening. Listening. What is my pain? What is my struggle? What are my shadow issues? And what's the next action that I need to make? So the last point I'd like to make in terms of spiritual shopping is that as you're walking up the mountain, there's many different paths. And it is recommended that you just stay with one path and then you'll get up the mountain the quickest. So my Zen master and my Zen training, they'd always say, even with Buddhism, try and stay with one practice for as long as you can, because you'll get the most benefits from that. However, my situation was a bit unusual because I started my Zen training and Zen practice because I couldn't find my Sangoma teacher because of apartheid. So I've got this very, very rich and beautiful Zen training. And then I went and I found my Sangoma teacher and I carried on in the Sangoma direction. However, those are two medicines that have become my medicine. So I teach according to those two different lineages because it's become my own. So the same thing for people, whatever walk you're making on this earth plane, honor the walk, which means if you find that you have dabbled or you've had a very strong connection with a couple of lineages, but it's opening your path, it's opening your way in the world, then honor that and carry on. So maybe it's two lineages, maybe it's three. Just be very aware. The path you're walking, is it a path of titillation or a path of deep immersion into the mud and shadow of your humanity, as well as the shining joy? Whatever your practice, it must turn, it must alchemize the mud, your difficulties, your shadow stuff. It must enable you to turn your obstacles and your issues into something beautiful. That's the most important thing. So the next thing I want to talk about, and that is stories. We all have stories. Stories of pain, stories of discovery, stories of trauma. And these stories make us who we are. And our biggest challenge is to also let these stories go. It's also my challenge. So I can talk about the chaos of being brought up in South Africa and the chaos of apartheid and the chaos of racism and the chaos of whites and black and all the colors of the rainbow. I can talk about the chaos of it all. However, at the end of the day, I have to let it all go, because I can go to the opposite end of the world and they might not have heard of apartheid. It might mean nothing to them. So I am more than just my stories and experiences. There's something else going on as well. So it's the same for all of us. One of the joys and wonders of traveling is I get to meet people who don't know my background. They don't know who I am. And that's beautiful, because each moment is fresh. I can recreate myself with them through our joint experience, just through, hello, my name is John, how are you? Ah, my name is Mary, where are you from? I'm from Pakistan. It's like, oh, what's it like there? And then we're starting fresh. So, it could be Pakistan, it could be Egypt, it doesn't matter. The point is, how can you start fresh in each moment where you can pick up your story and you can tell a story like I do or like you do? We all tell stories, and you can make people laugh or cry or feel, but then also you can let the story go. So I think psychotherapy is wonderful because I was trained in psychology and psychotherapy. However, it can also be an obstacle, and I'll give you a reason. If you continually go for psychotherapy for many years, you might encounter an obstacle. And the obstacle is, when you are rehashing your own story all the time, you can also concretize your story. And that can become an obstacle, because it's very healing to tell your story, but the aim of telling your story is to let your story go. If you're holding on to your story as an identity of who am I, and this is why I'm doing certain things in the world, that can become your obstacle. And it's just something we need to all be aware of. I speak for myself. I need to be aware of that as well. So what is your story, and how can you let it go? Yeah, and you're meeting someone, they might say, where are you from? And suddenly they're developing a kind of a story about who you are. And that's human nature, that's fine. However, when you're going for psychotherapy or you're going for help and you're going for any kind of talking therapy where you have to tell your story in such a way that you are also prepared to let it go. Start fresh. Because if we're holding on to something, it's hard for us to rediscover something new. Because the spiritual world and the spiritual path is about creating new pathways inside ourselves and new pathways in the world.
From the pattern of electricity. Rising. whether God exists or not, it doesn't make any difference. The difference is you've gotten through life believing in somebody or something. You have to have faith in them. If they let you down for any reason, well, that's the way it is. And I just take life as it comes. Comes and goes.
Isn't it wild how we laugh and we smile for the people we love and the people we don't, we deny. Isn't it wild how we fight to define what we do day to day by the way those around us portray? Isn't it wild how we love to indulge in a sorry as show of illusion in order to say us from our social grace?
I am Velocity Child, and every Friday at the stroke of midnight, ride the broomstick with Fallen Woman, stirring up the cauldron at Radio Free Brooklyn.